welcome to the Sutliffian Report. This is a Christian news show, and the stuff I share is often stuff that your news is afraid to share. Sadly, that is because they are not Christian, and they have this need to hide the truth from you. As a Christian, I cannot do that. So I'm going to start with scripture, as we usually do with the show. Today I'm reading Hebrews 2, verses 3 to 4. How shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which is at the first begun to be spoken by the Lord, and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? God also bearing them witness, both with signs and wonders, and with diverse miracles and gifts, according to his own will. This passage is part of a warning that J. Vernon McGee mentions. Think about it. What can you do to go to hell? What do you have to do? Nothing. Think about that. So if you don't have to do anything, you don't have to do anything to earn hell. God sent his son so that all may live and have eternal life. He offered his son so that all may have that chance to become joint heirs with him. But so few accept. What are they doing when they hear about the work of Christ? Nothing. They neglect the offer of salvation. But what is required to act on this offer that God presents? A simple acceptance. That's all. Acceptance. Shouldn't that blow your mind that that is all that is required? All we have to do is accept that God first loved us and that his son Jesus died on the cross for you and for me. But to neglect this gift leaves you on a road to perdition, a road to hell forevermore. Jesus didn't come and simply just proclaim who he was. He did many miracles. So many that even those who did not think him to be the Son of God wrote about him doing miracles. He offered signs and wonders to those present, not in their time, but in his time. The greatest of all the miracles was his resurrection from the dead. Dear Lord Jesus, so many say no through neglecting the offer of salvation that you put before them. Lord, I beg of you, that those I know may come to know you as their Savior. Changed my life, Lord, change theirs, please. You've brought me happiness and joy. My life has meaning. Lord, I owe you so much because of what you've done in my life. Use me, Lord, use us, that we too may help others see the great rewards in serving you. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I've been working with a few scholars, and we have been talking about the importance of commenting on the videos that are on memory. So I'm going to give you my first take of that. We're going to see how this works. I have to start one on BTR and then share my screen here, and we'll see how that goes. I've got a lot to learn about doing things on more platforms. So let me just get to the right spots here. And trying different things and doing them live. That's, again, you learn as you go. And you're almost there. And just one more up, I think. Here we go. All right, I'm going to hit it here. Hello, today I want to talk to you about some of the videos you can find on memory.org. Middle East Media Research Institute does a wonderful job putting out what Muslims are saying to other Muslims, and that's extremely important. One of the sources that they caught, this is from their number 8865, it's titled British Palestinian Journalist Abdel Bari Atwan. The sirens that go off when Hamas rockets hit Ashdod are like a Beethoven symphony to my ears. Now, this was heard on Al-Manar TV out of Lebanon. A British-Palestinian journalist, Abdel Bari Atwan, said that when he hears sirens indicating a rocket attack going off in Ashdod, it is like music, a Beethoven symphony to him. He made these remarks in an interview with Al-Manar TV, Hezbollah Lebanon, that aired on May 16, 2021. Atwan added that it is unprecedented for these rockets to hit Tel Aviv and for settlers to leave the beaches in their bathing suits seeking refuge in the nearest bomb shelter. Abdel Bari Atwan said specifically, "I hail from the Gaza Strip," he said. "We were refugees there. My family came from Ashdod. I sing twice when the rockets reach. I was born in the so-called diaspora by Allah when the rockets reach Ashdod and I hear the sirens. It's like music to me. It's like a Beethoven symphony. I have never heard such music. The second thing is that when we see those rockets hit Tel Aviv and the settlers flee the beaches in their bathing suits to the nearest bomb shelter, this is unprecedented in the history of the Arab-Zionist conflict." Well, Abdel Bari Atwan is not exactly telling you truth. Let me explain what I mean by that. He's not telling you truth. See, you have to understand that Sunni Muslims are not allowed to listen to instrumental music. In fact, I'd be surprised if he actually knew who Beethoven really was and had listened to his music. In fact, when I did my research on music, I discovered there was only one music teacher in all of Gaza. Now, I could be wrong as of this year. I mean, I only wrote about this a couple months ago, and maybe things have changed in a few months, but I doubt it. So I want to talk to you about what Umda al-Shalik, aka The Reliance of the Traveler, which is a book of Sharia translated into English. It says in R40.1, "As for the condemnation of musical instruments, flutes, strings, and the like by the truthful and the trustworthy, who does not speak from personal caprice, it is nothing besides the revelation inspired." This comes from a Quran, 53, verses 3 to 4. "Let those who refuse to obey him beware, lest calamity strike them or a painful torment," the prophet said. "Allah," this is another quote, "Allah Almighty and Majestic sent me as the guidance and mercy to believers and commanded me to do away with musical instruments, flutes, strings, crucifixes, and the affair of the pre-Islamic period of ignorance." Now, again, this comes from R40.1 in Reliance of the Traveler. Let's keep going. Number two, "On the day of resurrection, Allah will pour molten lead into the ears of whoever sits listening to his songstress. Number three, song makes hypocrisy grow in the heart as water does herbage. Number four, this community will experience the swallowing up of some people by the earth, metamorphosis of some into animals and being rained upon with stones. Someone asked, when will this be, O Messenger of Allah? And he said, when songstresses and musical instruments appear and wine is held to be lawful. Number five, there will be peoples of my community who will hold fornication, silk, wine, and musical instruments to be lawful. All of these explicit, compelling textual evidence that musical instruments of all types are unlawful." Are you hearing this? This comes, again, from Sharia. Kafal ra'ah an muhammarat al-hala wa al-sama. And that's, there's a source there. You can see I'm putting this up for you. "It is unlawful," R40.2, "it is unlawful to use musical instruments such as those which drink, which drinkers are known for, like the mandolin," and I'm just trying to get my mouse over there, "lute, cymbals, and flute, or to listen to them. It is permissible to play the tambourine at weddings, circumcisions, and other times, even if it has bells on its sides. Beating the kuba, a long drum, with a narrow middle is unlawful." Now, singing unaccompanied by musical instruments. Now, you thought it was just bad that, you know, musical instruments are banned, but even singing unaccompanied by musical instruments is problematic. As for listening to singing that is not accompanied by instruments, one should know that singing or listening to singing is offensive except under the circumstances to mention in what follows. Some scholars hold that singing is sunnah at weddings and the like. And our imams, Ghazali and Ibn Abd al-Salam, say that it is sunnah if it moves one to a noble state of mind that makes one remember the hereafter. It's clear from this that all poetry which encourages good deeds, wisdom, noble qualities, abstinence from this worldly thing, or similar pious traits such as urging one to obey Allah, follow the sunnah, or shun disobedience, it is sunnah to write, sing, or listen to, as more than one of our imams has stated is obvious, since using a means to do good is itself doing good. Sorry you're paying attention. Abd Del Bari Atwan has proclaimed that the sound of rockets are like a symphony, when Abd Del Bari Atwan has likely never heard instrumental music, having been forbidden by Islam. How he can make this claim without any knowledge of what Beethoven's music sounds like, I find interesting. Was the purpose to offend us as non-Muslims, or to send a message that the non-Muslims will be confused when they hear this? Or did they think we were too stupid to actually understand? That's probably what it comes down to. So, that's the point I'm making. And I often sadly do, is that we have a group of people who think we are stupid, who don't believe we will get the truth, that we will understand what they teach and preach. And that is problematic. Watch for my book. It's coming out very, very soon. I hope to have it out this first week of June. It's called The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. It should be out this week. That's my hope and prayer. Everything seems to be going pretty good. So watch for the book. Again, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad should be out this week. Now, I've been paying special attention to the lessening of COVID restrictions because here where I live in Libland, New York State, it's quite important because, you know, I actually have a friend who was thinking, you know, they made an announcement that they would allow people who were vaccinated not to wear masks inside. Does that mean they can ask you for proof of your vaccination? No, it doesn't, because, again, people are thinking, well, you're going to get arrested if you don't wear a mask and you go inside. Well, the law for HIPAA actually requires that people do not ask you about your health and your vaccinations and things like that. So, I mean, I had to explain this to a few people that they can't do that. It's against the law. And it is not a crime to not wear a mask. Not in this state. Even though they may tell you that it's a crime, it is not a crime. It's not on the books. So, something to think about. Now, as I said, I've been paying special attention to the lessening of COVID restrictions and the... What I need to tell you is that I'm actually paying attention to how this promotion of vaccinations is going out. Now, Facebook has caught, thanks to whistleblowers, and I think this is extremely important to play. I'm going to play for you what was caught on Facebook by the Project Veritas. I'm going to play their video. What I'm going to share with you should shock you. It should appall you. It should make you angry. So here we go. I'm going to put this up and start this right off. Now, I am trying to figure out if you hear two voices on the video, because I know in BTR they can't hear this. So I'm going to play this. Here we go. And I'm going to... And trying to get the one for BTR going at the same time, which means I get to listen to two things.
When it comes time to standing up for a world I want my children to live in, I don't want to leave them a world to where they don't have these liberties. We weren't allowed to have voice, and yet Facebook counts itself with promoting people's opportunity to have voice. They're trying to control this content before it even makes it onto your page, before you can see it. Yeah, that was my job, it's like, what do I do? But that's less of a concern to me.
We have just obtained multiple leaked documents from inside Facebook, this time detailing a plan to curb, quote, vaccine hesitancy on a global scale. It was so concerning, it brought us not one, but two whistleblowers from inside Facebook who are ready to speak out on what this means for free speech and public discourse on their own platform.
Facebook uses classifiers in their algorithms to determine certain content to be what they call vaccine hesitant, or they call it vaccine hesitancy, and without the user's knowledge, they assign a score to these comments that's called a VH score. Vaccine hesitancy score, and based on that score, we'll demote or leave the comment alone, depending on the content within the comment.
Our first Facebook insider is a data center technician who leaked us multiple internal documents detailing an algorithm test being run on 1.5% of Facebook and Instagram's nearly 3.8 billion users worldwide. The goal? To, quote, drastically reduce user exposure to vaccine hesitancy in comments.
It's the same thing. You see a lot of this difference in their public policy versus the private policy, where the public policy is very vague, it's very ambiguous, it's designed to be questioned because it's designed to be able to easily defend. But then if you look at the private policy, it's much more clear, much more specific. I think that they're trying to make it seem like they're not doing as much, or that they're just kind of like generalizing it, like, oh, we have some robot that just tags your posts and then, you know, we look at it. But I think they don't want people to know, oh, no, we actually have something that we made specifically for vaccine hesitancy. So the main document, along with all the attachments and stuff that goes with it. So basically, when they write this algorithm, it goes through Facebook content, and it looks for certain keywords that are related to vaccination or, you know, not getting a vaccine, stuff like that. And it gives it a score, and the VA score means vaccine hesitancy, which is defined as being hesitant to get a vaccine, but not just like, well, I don't know, it's even, well, I saw a study that said that someone died that got the vaccine. That's vaccine hesitancy.
So this is a beta test. This is all a beta test.
Right.
And how big is this beta test?
They refer to the test size as 1.5%. I'm not exactly which pool that pulls from, but I think it's comments on authoritative health pages.
You seem to think that they've already rolled this out. Why do we believe they've already rolled this out?
In one slideshow that they have, they call it their weekly progress tracker,
mm-hmm.
They actually lay all this out in a chart, and you can see, you can look at the slides, they go by date. So we've got here COVID-19 back safety and efficacy global. Currently global, 13 languages, Facebook plus Instagram. Pulse C19 vaccine, global, currently global, 66 languages. And the very first thing that brought me to the conclusion that they wanted to do this globally is they were developing it in, like, you know, as many languages as they could get their hands on.
So this is like a product launch almost.
Yes, yeah. In their last quarterly report, they reported 2.79 billion people on Earth use some kind of Facebook app.
Who's behind this new algorithm policy? Well, one thing is for sure, the authors of this experiment, Juyo Hao, Nick Gibeon, Hendrik Townley, Amit Ball, and Matt Gills are not low-level employees. In fact, one of the internal documents Project Veritas obtained was a Facebook flowchart that showed they are only a few clicks away from Mark Zuckerberg himself. Who makes these decisions?
These are teams at Facebook, and they call themselves, they work with what they call B2B, barriers to vaccination. So that's one of their core terms, is barriers to vaccination. And then the people on these teams, they call them health integrity teams. So there's a health integrity team for Messenger. There's a health integrity team for every system that they have.
An integrity team. Is this came out about after March 2020 and COVID?
No.
This is something that's existed
yes.
over time. So you have health integrity teams and barrier to vaccination teams at Facebook.
For this year, Ami Ball, he's a research scientist for the core data science team at Facebook. He also works in health integrity. Everyone who works on this project works in health integrity. Ted Townley, this is the experiment launch post. As you can see, this is on April 16th. This is 2021. That's why there's no year there, because this is this year. And Hendrik Townley is one of the software engineers who worked on this. There were, I think it was him and two other software engineers. And then Ami Ball wrote the actual classifier itself. I'm sure he had like a team of developers, but he is considered the one who wrote it. Ami Ball, and then as you go up, it's like his boss's boss.
So Ami Ball works for Udi Weisenberg, who works for Nicholas Steer. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
And that person works for Danny Ferrante, and that person works for Javier Olivian, and Javier Olivian reports directly to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
So there's a chain that goes all the way down to a meatball. This kind of censorship sounds similar to shadow banning, when users are unaware their posts can't be seen, a term one of our own investigations coined when exposing Twitter just a few years ago. But this time, we're exposing Facebook and Instagram's methods to quash an entire side of a conversation, arguably one of the most pressing issues of the day. According to these documents, Facebook tiers users 0 to 5 and a score 0 to 1. Can you talk a little about this tier system?
Yeah, so basically this is what they're using to structure how they're going to judge this content on a scale to how vaccine hesitant it actually is, or if it's explicitly discouraging. In my opinion, the main reason why they built this was for the human, what they call raters, so that they can use this as a reference when they... So if the algorithm can't make a decision on a certain post, it'll send it to a human rater. And then the human rater looks at it, and they will make a decision on whether or not it's vaccine hesitant or not.
So we have tier two, indirect discouragement. And what happens when you are a tier two?
So basically, your comment is going to be suppressed. As to the scale of that suppression, it's hard to say. You have to look at it like a case-by-case basis. But what they're saying is it's going to get, they call it a position change. On some of these comments, you can see it'll say position change 7. And I'm not sure whether the 7 refers to like a 7% or if it's just like 7 positions down in the comment chain.
So it's suppressed.
Yes.
But we don't know the extent of the suppression.
Right.
And we've heard shadow ban. We've heard deboost. I have not heard position change. Facebook has not been shy about combating vaccine hesitancy, as reported in their own press release dated May 11th of this year. However, what they say publicly in their own policy doesn't scratch the surface of what is written in these internal leaked documents by the Facebook whistleblower. If I read this correctly, Facebook is saying it doesn't matter if the story is true so long as it doesn't cause people to hesitate getting the vaccine? Or what's your read on this?
The borderline vaccine framework, shocking stories potentially or actually true. Events or facts that can raise safety concerns.
That post was done by a user, and they've taken a screenshot and observed it
yes.
as part of the tier system.
Right.
Yeah. What about this gives them alarm?
How is this not scary? That would be considered indirect discouragement.
Indirect discouragement, which should be considered tier two.
Right.
This is an example of indirect discouragement of the
yep.
vaccine.
Questioning the vaccine, questioning anything involving the vaccine.
And this was then a demoted. On Facebook. So this is another example of tier two indirect discouragement. Why don't you tell us why this would be indirect discouragement according to Facebook?
So this would be considered vaccine hesitant because they don't want people to see someone had a bad effect. They're not saying don't get the vaccine, but they're saying look at all this negative stuff that happened after I got the vaccine.
So they're reporting facts, but truth doesn't matter.
No, because it doesn't match the narrative. So, and the narrative being get the vaccine is good for you, everyone should get it, and if you don't, you will be singled out.
Right.
As an enemy of society. So the VAERS, that is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, it looks like they're measuring the comments where they're mentioning, you know, that the patient died.
So is VAERS a CDC supported program?
Yes, I think so. Really, they support all this because, you know, they release the standards, the CDC themselves. And that's really one of the primary things that Facebook is basing their policy off of is, well, if you looked at the public policy, it would be according to the authoritative health pages.
So they are open about the fact that they essentially coordinate with the CDC here.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
from the internal document, content pointing to the vaccine adverse effects reporting system, data that suggests extreme risk without providing full context. Full context.
Mm-hmm.
What do they mean by that?
I think so, like in the previous comments, like she said, during this study, 653 people died, and then they don't put the rest of the study in there. It's like, okay, so you want me to write like a 10-page comment?
Right.
What's full context?
What is the context?
What is another ambiguous term? If they saw a study from someone they didn't like, would they say, well, that's not the full context because ABCDEFG?
Ultimately, it seems like any facts that escape a particular narrative are omitted, demoted, deboosted, banned?
Yes.
Considered dangerous to society?
Expressed in any way possible.
Where do you think this is headed? Does it get worse from here?
Yes.
How so?
I think people accept it, and they see people like Twitter, Facebook, Google, and stuff like that. They see that this is accepted by the public, and then they go, that's like a green light. So they're like, oh, we can go ahead and do this more. So not only are we going to start doing vaccine stuff, we're going to spread it to everything. So we're going to start saying, if you make a post that could put somebody in danger or it could compromise someone's safety, whatever that means, then we're going to go ahead and look at that and assign that a score of some unknown classifier, who knows what it could be. They're trying to control this content before it even makes it onto your page, before you even see it and when you're scrolling on your phone. I think they're afraid of what people would conclude.
Sounds like they don't think about the underlying values.
Yeah, or what it could turn into, the slippery slope.
They're not even thinking about that.
Nope.
And do you think there's a lot of people inside Facebook that agree with you, or some percentage? What would you estimate that number of people to be?
I would say at least 25%.
So you're telling me that 25% of the people there agree that what they're doing with this vaccine hesitancy coding and algorithms is morally wrong.
Yes, that would not spread me at all. The policy is going to keep expanding until anything can violate it. What would happen if this was scaled larger and scaled to Twitter and the internet as a whole is way worse than anything that could happen for me getting fired from my job. To me, that it far outweighs that. Because it's more about more than me. It's about really everyone in the world.
It's clear this Facebook insider is not alone in his concerns of Facebook's new policy that will demote discourse on vaccines in general. As a matter of fact, the next insider you're about to meet felt so compelled to come forward, he goes so far as to compare the new policy to an abusive relationship. What do you do at Facebook?
I'm a data center engineer. I'd say that, in a sense, it's prohibiting people from being able to have an open dialogue about issues that affect their personal security. Some of these things, the questions, the comments that are being presented, you know, are from people that have concerns about their personal health or their personal security being affected. It's kind of like having a relationship with somebody that's controlling and abusive, in a sense, like an abusive partner not allowing their spouse to speak out about the things that are going on in their marriage or their relationship and limiting their voice. It's very damaging from that sense. You know, if you think about this logically, it just, you know, it's very incriminating in my opinion.
Just months ago, this same insider leaked us a tape of Mark Zuckerberg privately speaking to his team last July, showcasing his own vaccine hesitancy when talking about COVID.
I do just want to make sure that I share some caution on this because we just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people's DNA and RNA.
Today, his own words would violate their new public policy. You were the source that brought us the Mark Zuckerberg vaccine footage from July 2020, is that correct?
That's cool.
Zuckerberg seemed to change his mind, evolve on the issue of vaccine, and the Facebook policy itself would have prevented Zuckerberg from saying what it is that he had said just a few months ago. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What prompted you to give that footage to Project Veritas?
Based on my own knowledge and research of, you know, the adverse effects and potential side effects of vaccines, of any medication, really. So I think it's important for people to be understanding of those facts. We're able to have these conversations at work with our coworkers about our medical decisions, and we do. We have them, you know, frequently. Why is it okay for us to have these conversations at work as adults and not have somebody step in and say, hey, you need to stop talking about that, and you shouldn't talk about that, you're not allowed to talk about that, that's fact-checked, that's false. Occasionally people do in the conversation, but but we're allowed to have open dialogue and hear.
You're saying that you can have these conversations at the water cooler in an office.
Absolutely, even in the midst of the office.
In the midst of the office, yeah. At Facebook, the location, Facebook, but you're not allowed to go onto Facebook and write this stuff.
No.
That's ironic.
It is very ironic.
What is your message to Mr. CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who is certainly watching this video?
I would ask, you said that you support freedom of expression. My question to you is, why, in a sense, you don't support freedom of expression in the most basic sense that's available to all people everywhere, which is to exist as God created them, without any interference or intrusion by any corporation or government to exist as they are, and why push the narrative that it's not okay for people to go ahead and exist, to express themselves as God's creation without taking a vaccine? Why is there this push to suppress that ideology?
This insider's biggest concern is Facebook building a, quote, community of compliance, unquote, and feels the topic may go beyond the authority of Zuckerberg himself.
It's the platform that they want to build. It's the community that they want to build. They want to build a community where everybody complies, not where people can have open discourse and dialogue about the most personal and private and intimate decisions that anybody could ever face in their life, which is regarding their own body, their own health.
And based upon your position and what you've seen and your role at Facebook, why do they want people to comply? Why is that the culture at Facebook?
For the promotion of a society that is focused on medical progress, in a sense, or medical experimentation.
What is Facebook doing to promote COVID vaccines to its billions of users?
Specifically encouraging people to post, to take on the profile frame for showing that they've been vaccinated, and to promote, in a sense, solidarity amongst other people that have taken the vaccine and encourage users to also go and get the vaccine. It's interesting that they would, encourage one side but not allow the other side to speak of why they wouldn't be making a decision to get a vaccine. There's no solidarity. There's no opportunity to be united around that. It's just basically get the vaccine or feel left out. People aren't allowed to have voice, and yet, Facebook touts itself with promoting people's opportunity to have voice. And, I stated before, having a voice about the most important decisions anyone has to face in their life is pretty important, and it's shocking and disturbing, really, to see people that are willing to go to the lengths of limiting those discussions around the world, for things that concern people's own personal security. I almost feel like there's outside sources pressuring Mark, or could be. I'm not saying that's a fact, but, it does make me concerned. And you look at the video with Fauci and, Mark discussing it. Mark doesn't seem too pleased with, the fact that he had to bring it up. It's almost like he was, he had to mention it.
These two brave insiders know they risk it all standing against Facebook, one of the most powerful institutions of the day. Yet, they are still putting it all on the line in order to preserve our liberties.
I think that's also the main reason why people don't want to come out with it, because what if I have two kids, I have, my wife, and I lose my job, it's like, what do I do? But that's less of a concern to me.
And the people who may do what you did next, but they're not sure if they should do it, what's your message to those people?
I'd say go ahead and do it. And then just think about what I said. There's a lot of blowback to tell the truth, and that's true as far as human history is concerned. And, yeah, you are going to receive blowback, but just weigh it out. Can you live with yourself for the rest of your life? You worked at Facebook and you knew about this, especially if it came out later. You're like, man, I saw that so many times. I could have said something and I didn't. How are you going to feel about that? That's my thing. My morality. I have to show somebody this, because at least, even if nothing were to come of this and for some reason everything was scrapped, I would still think that it was worth it. I'm like, well, at least I tried. I tried to show somebody this.
It's almost like you're saying that your desire to follow your conscience outweighs any potential risk there might be to you from doing this.
Yes.
What is your message to those people that are watching this who agree with you inside Facebook?
I'll say that you're not alone. The biggest thing with social media that we've seen throughout the years is that ranking people's comments, their posts, even like news media, there's this view that tries to make you think that you're alone in this and that you're not the majority. And even people that say that they agree with it, internally they deal with struggles. Internally they question things. It's just that they're not able to overcome that cognitive dissonance that sits in, and they resort to what is safe. It's easier to comply with things than it is to come forward and say this is wrong, or to really awaken to understanding that the way you're being treated or the way other people are being treated is wrong. And so that's challenging, but know that you're not alone, and that if you do come forward and you do speak up, that you can live peacefully knowing that you did the right thing no matter what. And that's encouraging not just to other people, but it's also encouraging to yourself. It won't make you feel as alone anymore.
That's very profound, I think.
I'm a father, so, you know, obviously, like, I fear for my family, for my children's safety. But I also understand that I have to, as I told, you know, my wife, I have to do something. You know, when it comes time to standing up for a world I want my children to live in, I don't want to leave them a world to where they don't have these liberties, these personal securities, to where they can willingly make their own medical decisions between them and their doctor and those that are closest to them. That's not something I can live in. That's not something I could do.
Okay.
And it came down to the point where I had to make a decision to do what was right.
Now, I have to ask you, how important freedom of speech is to you? For me, it's all important. I am thankful I live in a country where I can say what I think. I am thankful that I live in a country where it is not wrong to criticize. I mean, I get that there's a test on our First Amendment. And it has to do with, are you creating a threat? Are you creating a danger? That is a great test. Now I have to ask you, if you've been paying attention to all that this video by Project Veritas and its expose of Facebook hiding the truth, as Facebook has been known to do, hide the truth. My concern is that you need to know where to find the truth. So my suggestion is for people to write this down, veers.hhs.gov. That's veers.hhs.gov. I'm going to recommend you go there and download the data for yourself on what's wrong about these vaccines. It actually records just about everything that has happened that is alleged, hear what I'm saying, it is alleged that these vaccines have caused deaths and various other things. This is the number one reason why it is not approved by the FDA. What shocked me about this data, it's still mind-numbing. If you understand, you can put it into an Excel spreadsheet, and you can sort it by age, which is one of the things I did. And I sorted it to only include deaths. I have to say, some of these things that came up, I'm kind of mind-blown. I'm just going to read a few of them. And I'm not going to do more than read some of the symptom text. Here's one. The patient who died wasn't even a half a year old. Listen closely. The patient they're calling here received a second dose of Pfizer vaccine, which is actually the mother they're talking about, on March 17th of 2020 while at work. On March 18th of 2020, her five-month-old breastfed infant developed a rash within 24 hours and was inconsolable, refusing to eat, and developed a fever. The patient, the baby was brought to the local ER where assessments were performed. Blood analysis revealed elevated liver enzymes. Infant was hospitalized, continued to decline, and passed away. There are other ones here that shocked me. There's one here with a two-year-old. This two-year-old received a vaccine. This kind of blows my mind. She did die. I'm kind of mind-numbed that they would be allowed to give this vaccine to a two-year-old. Like I said, I'm just kind of mind-numbed some of these things. I'm not going to read the specifics on that one. Here's another one with a seven-year-old. Vaccine was given in a clinic on March 9th. On March 14th, she was found at home unresponsive in her chair. This child was 7 years old. Brain death. We have a 15-year-old. Person states they don't know the exact date of the first or second vaccine. Person who wrote this was an attendant in PICU, which is the pediatric ICU, the patient, and she had a heart attack 3 to 4 days after her second vaccination. 15 years old. On. There are numerous pieces here. I only sorted them by age, and then if you know how to filter, you can do that, and then choose. I only chose death. In some of these things, I just was shocked at. I mean, the young people here that are dying of this, 21-year-olds, 22, 23, 24, it goes on and on and on. And I only selected those who had died. And again, some of these, there are some issues with this reporting system that I should mention. One, the claim here is that the VAR system only reports 5% of reality at the most. There are claims that it only reports 1% of reality. There are no claims that it overreports. That should be enough to scare you. I do not recommend this vaccine. I can't. Go to VAERS, VAERS.hhs.gov. Find out for yourself. Is this something you would recommend? Now, I didn't mention the names of any of the vaccines that were actually provided on the information that I shared. I didn't say them because it's, again, the system is a reporting system. It's not a verification system. I didn't see anything that verified or showed that these things were as a result of the vaccinations. These were things that were reported by medical personnel primarily. That's important to understand. I can't say I'm anything more than shocked when I think about this. I'm flabbergasted that these are actually continuing. These vaccinations are allowed to continue. If we go back just a few years, these would never, ever have been allowed. I think when we approve stuff that has not been fully tested, we endanger ourselves. My suggestion is if you have any questions about that, please look farther down on my Facebook files. You will find a Texas House hearing on the COVID vaccinations, and please listen to that. If you join the Sutliffian Report on Facebook, you will find that easily. This stuff should just blow your mind. Going on for other topics in the news, Biden is clueless once again about Israel and is taking direction from his anti-Semitic commie Muslim masters. Voice of the of America actually has this story, which I don't usually expect that. It says Blinken announces new U.S. disaster relief for Gaza by Nike Ching. It came out May 25th. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says he will ask Congress for a $75 million in assistance for Palestinians in Gaza following the recent ceasefire that brought an end to the conflict. Blinken made the announcement after talks in Ramallah with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas Tuesday. Wait, you met with the head of a group that the United States has declared a terrorist entity. Are you catching this? Yeah. And this head of this terrorist organization actually sends payments out to people who kill Israelis, to people who attack Israelis, to people who get arrested for attacking Israelis, to the families of those who died while killing. Yeah. And that is what the Secretary of State wants to finance. This is kind of mind-numbing. So I want you to pay attention here because there's actually more to this story. The last time Biden released money to Iran, there was an attack on Israel. Now, again, let's think about this. He's talking about releasing money to another terrorist entity, which is against federal law, because they directly finance and pay for those who attack Israelis, which is what I've been saying. Now, the Biden administration is openly admitting that – now, I've got to find my mouse. It ran away. This is crazy, the joy of doing things on split screens. The Biden administration State Department is now openly admitting that this money that they want to give to Gaza, there are no guarantees it won't promote jihad, that it won't promote terrorist activities. Are you catching this? So they want to finance something which could end up killing Jews, which could end up killing Israelis, people that are our allies. This came out in the National Pulse. The senior State Department official today accepted that aid from President Biden's regime to Gaza may end up replenishing the terror arsenal of Hamas, the Iranian-funded group, which has refused to conduct elections since 2006. The group designated a terrorist entity by the United States, the Organization of American States, Israel, the European Union, and Canada may now find itself on the receiving end of Biden's State Department largesse. Wait a minute. You're going to give terrorists millions of dollars? How is that legal? Somebody please explain that to me. I can't see how it's legal, especially when knowing that it could end up financing attacks. That is shocking to consider that the United States is engaged in this. I understood that this was happening when Hillary was Secretary of State. I understood this was happening when Kerry was Secretary of State. Yes, because he manufactured and helped Iran get millions of dollars. And what did they do? Again, they have been spending money and sending it to for terror attacks. We know that they helped Al-Qaeda. That's not even a question. So let's look at one more thing President Biden's responsible for. Again, I consider President Biden dementia-ridden. I think he is dangerous to this country. The fact that we have somebody who is not in possession of all his faculties, who is responsible for this country. I want to tell you another thing he has done recently. Biden's team has freed Al-Qaeda ally who plotted to smuggle nukes into the United States. This is an article by Daniel Greenfield. Daniel Greenfield is a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the Freedom Center. He's an investigative journalist and a writer focused on the radical left and Islamic terrorism. He writes, "With inflation rising almost as fast as gas prices and the cost of a home, Joe Biden ain't doing much for most Americans. But if you're an Al-Qaeda terrorist, he's got your back. Just ask three of Gitmo's finest who are benefiting from Biden's generosity. Saifullah Paracha was a Pakistani businessman and a New York travel agent with some big plans. The Gitmo inmate, now being set loose by Biden, wanted to do something big against the U.S. 9/11 was an Al-Qaeda rearview mirror, and its mastermind, KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, was plotting a sequel. The Gitmo dossier for Paracha first details plans to use his textile business to smuggle explosives into the United States, and these ready-made explosives, specifically C4, would go into shipping containers full of women and children's clothing. Shipping Al-Qaeda's C4 to America would be more lucrative than dumping sweatshop labor, sweatpants, because if Al-Qaeda used detainees' textile company for shipping explosives to the United States, he would likely be paid additional money beyond the standard shipping fee. No word on whether there would have been a bonus for every American blown up." Again, this is from Daniel Greenfield. He writes more. He says that, and then escalated from there with testimony from Paracha, allegedly claimed that he believed he could obtain unspecified chemicals from Chinese sources. Fellow he was talking to about the unspecified chemicals, Amar al-Baluchi, one of the few Gitmo jihadis whom neither Obama or Biden has managed to release yet, had helped out the 9/11 hijackers with flight simulators and manuals, and allegedly chatted with Muhammad Atta. After 9/11, al-Baluchi was looking at all sorts of plans for crashing planes into things, like the American consulate in Karachi or London's Heathrow Airport. But there were other options on the table. The nature of the chemicals out of China was never specified, but the KSM lieutenant believed they were chemicals or biological agents that could be used as a weapon. Paracha reportedly advised Al-Qaeda that one should look for a similar-looking chemical and put it in between the good chemicals, and it would be very easy to get through customs. With this business experience, he could offer Al-Qaeda tips on smuggling, such as warning them about the radiological sensors at ports or places of entry into the United States that would make it difficult to smuggle radioactive material into the United States. Are you catching what he's talking about? He's talking about nukes. But Biden's newest charity case wanted something bigger. The dossier described the 9/11 mastermind's associate in Paracha chatting about Al-Qaeda getting some radiological or nuclear items several times because Paracha wanted to help Al-Qaeda do something big. Paracha also discussed nuclear attacks and attacks against nuclear power plants and had an idea for Al-Qaeda to attack a nuclear power plant. So you can see why Joe Biden's letting it go. Can you? I can. Why settle for helping Iran nuke America when you can also help Al-Qaeda nuke America, right? The Pakistani graduate of the New York Institute of Technology expressed strong anti-U.S. sentiments and allegedly stated that nuclear weapons should be used against United States troops as thousands of the troops would be killed at once. The pro-terror lobby had spent all these years claiming that Paracha was an innocent victim of American imperialism who has never been charged with anything and was smeared with confessions obtaining by acts of horrifying torture like Barney's songs played on a nonstop loop. I admit that would be torturous, but they would consider that. Yeah. Curious Apparently, the dossier mentions that Paracha's diary had references to military chemical warfare agents and their effects on humans, including sarin nerve gas. But what New York travel agent hasn't filled his diary with entries about the effects of nerve gas on humans, along with contact information from an alleged Al-Qaeda anthrax operative? Daniel Greenfield, he's nailing it. But what New York travel agent? Think about that. You'd have to be an Islamophobe to find anything suspicious about that, Daniel Greenfield writes. Sadly, none of these plans worked out. Instead, the agents of the great Satan told Paracha that they wanted him to come to Thailand to discuss a deal with Kmart. When Paracha showed up to pitch Kmart reps on Blue Light Special that might or might not glow in the dark, they weren't there to get a deal on some Pakistani underwear, but offering a place off Cuba with a view. Even Obama didn't send Paracha loose, but Biden is determined to out-Obama him. The media understandably doesn't want to trouble Americans with an uncomfortable mentions of nuclear weapons and Chinese chemicals when explaining Biden's latest gift to Al-Qaeda. The New York Times only mentions that Paracha is a former businessman and longtime legal resident of New York, and that he has heart disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure. Also, some years ago, a spiritual leader with Buddhist symbols, made famous by an Austrian house painter, carved into his forehead, died of colon cancer while one of California's oldest inmates. It's almost as awful as when the elderly former house painter committed suicide after a long struggle with syphilis, along with his new bride in a bunker that Biden would have envied. The Hill plainly, instinctively whines that Paracha was the oldest and reportedly among the sickest detainees held at Guantanamo Bay. He suffered from heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, since Paracha is still alive. And the description is in the past tense. We can only assume that being freed by Biden is a cure for heart disease, diabetes, and blood pressure. If Biden really wants to cure cancer, he can drop all of that moonshot nonsense. All he needs to do is give all of Al-Qaeda cancer and then release them. If it doesn't cure them, it'll kill them. Are you catching this, people? Think about this. This president is releasing Al-Qaeda operatives that were willing to nuke us, that were willing to use chemical weapons against us. This is scary stuff. It's mind-numbing, and this is actually reality, people. It is reality, and that is part of what bothers me the most, is that some people can't see this as a dangerous reality. It bothers me that no matter what we seem to do that's right, the Democrats seem to be out there demonstrating their hatred towards America and the American people. Now, one example of this came this week when liberal Democrats hosted and promoted a virtual event that promoted cop killers. So this article comes from the Washington Free Beacon. Chuck Ross, it came out May 26. He writes, three Democratic lawmakers hosted a forum earlier this month where several convicted cop killers were hailed as political prisoners. The event featured a former Black Panther implicated in the torture of a member suspected of being a police informant. Speakers at the May 10th forum, hosted by Representative Steve Cohen, Democrat of Tennessee, Bobby Rush, a Democrat of Illinois, and Barbara Lee, a Democrat of California, praised Moimo Abu-Jamal, Mutulu Shakur, H. Rap Brown, and other Black liberationists who are all serving life sentences for killing police officers. The topic of the event was COINTELPRO, the FBI program that has tracked Black separatist groups in the 1960s and 70s. The defense of the cop killers comes as Democratic leaders are trying to downplay the perception that the party is anti-police. Some congressional Democrats have supported defunding police departments in the wake of high-profile deaths of minorities. Yeah, high-profile deaths. When you actually look at the statistics, there's almost none. In fact, more whites are killed by cops than blacks. What does that say? Lee introduced perhaps the most controversial speaker at the evening event, former Black Panther leader Erica Huggins. Lee, who worked closely with the Black Panthers as an Oakland community activist in the 1970s, referred to Huggins as her former colleague and comrade. Huggins and other forum speaker, Black Panther Party co-founder Bobby Seale, was charged in 1970 with the murder of Alex Rackley, a party member suspected of snitching to the police. Rackley was tortured on May 18, 1969. At a Black Panther hideout in New Haven, Connecticut. He was fatally shot and dumped in a river 2 days later. Huggins and Seale were accused of ordering the hit on Rackley, who was 19 years old. While the case was dropped against Huggins and Seale after a jury failed to reach a verdict, a tape recording introduced at their trial revealed that Huggins was present while Rackley was being tortured. Black Panthers beat Rackley with sticks and poured boiling water over him to force him to confess that he was a police informant, according to contemporaneous news reports of the trial. The Washington Post reported in a 1977 retrospective of the case that Huggins admitted to boiling the water poured on Rackley, verbally abusing him and kicking him while he sat tied to a chair. Huggins' lawyer claimed at her trial that she was pressured into taking part in the interrogation and that she played no role in his death. Lee and her Democratic colleagues did not mention Rackley's murder at the hands of the Black Panthers. But Lee hailed Huggins as an example of the strength of leadership of women in the Black Panther Party. She said it was mind-boggling to her that Black Panthers were harassed, assaulted, and killed by police. Huggins, who did not respond to the Washington Free Beacon's request for comment, told The Guardian in 2015 that she stayed with the party for another decade after the Rackley murder because she was committed to the party, not to orchestrations of the FBI. Huggins refers to herself as a former political prisoner on her personal website, has forged a career in academia since leaving the Panthers. Hunter's affair. During her remarks on the forum, she instead criticized unspecified forces that she said are spreading disinformation about the Black Lives Matter movement. She said that, like modern-day activists, Black Panther goal was to help create a just and equitable world. The Democrats also did not rebuff two other speakers who claimed that a group of Black liberation activists convicted of killing police officers were political prisoners. One speaker, Akua Najeri, called for the release of Abu Jamal and Brown, referring to them as political prisoners, prisoners of war, prisoners of conscience. Nkechi Taifa, a civil rights activist, lamented that the cop killers had not received parole even though they are in their 70s and 80s. Abu Jamal, a former Black Panther, was sentenced to death for the 1981 murder of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner. He has become a martyr of sorts for left-wing activists who claim he was given an unfair trial. Other cop killers praised at the event have similar records. Mutulu Shakur, a former member of the Black Liberation Army, is serving a 60-year prison sentence for murder and robbery in his role in the 1981 heist of a Brinks armored truck in New York. Shakur and five others murdered one guard and injured another. Russell Maroon Schultz, a former Panther, was convicted in the 1970 murder of a Philadelphia police officer, H. Rapp Brown. Another former Panther known as Jamal al-Amin was sentenced to life in prison for killing two Georgia sheriff's deputies in 2000. Sundiata Kohli, another former Black Panther mentioned at the forum, was sentenced to life in prison for the 1973 murder of a New Jersey state trooper. Cohen and Lee didn't respond to requests for comment that was submitted to their congressional offices. Do you think they're a little embarrassed they got called out for their love of cop killers? Some of these things are just too shocking, too appalling to accept as reality. But when you start seeing this, yeah, these are communist people. Their goal is the destruction of America. And it should be of no surprise that they are part of the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party has left democracy's values. Now, do your own history research on the Democratic Party. Democratic Party is the party of the slaver. Democratic Party is the party that hated civil rights. They fought civil rights. They're the party of Jim Crow. They are the party that created the Ku Klux Klan. Do your own research, people. Find out for yourselves if I'm telling you the truth. If you don't believe me, listen, I'm a retired social studies teacher. I'm telling you, you have to be cautious. You have to be aware of what's going on. Now, next up, I have a story about an imam in California who has been claiming that Jews commit criminal acts based on the Torah. He then claims there are no Islamic scriptures that encourage criminal activity. Well, Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch had to respond, and this was on May 25th. He writes, does the Imam Salim Amar Muhammad think that his Muslim audience is stupid? Does he think that none of them have actually read the Quran? He says Jews use their scriptures to justify criminal acts, but in Islam we don't have any of this? Reality. Here we go. Surah 860. Against them, make ready your strength to the utmost of your power, including steeds of war, to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah and your enemies. Surah 812. When your Lord was revealing to the angels, I am with you, so confirm to the believers, I shall cast terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, so strike their necks and strike every finger of them. Surah 3:151. We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve for what they have associated with Allah, of which he had not sent down authority, and their refuge will be fire, and wretched is the residence of the wrongdoers. Surah 2:191-193. And kill them wherever you find them, and drive them out from wherever they drove you out. Persecution is worse than slaughter, but fight them not by the holy mosque until they should fight you there. Then if they fight you, kill them. Such is the recompense of unbelievers. But if they give over, surely Allah is all-forgiving and all-compassionate. Fight them until there is no persecution and the religion is Allah's. Then if they give over, there shall be no enmity save for evildoers. This list goes on and on and on. Think about that. I am never going to get through that list today. Not even within the hour left, I would not get through that list. That is something to think about, to say that they have nothing when they actually do. Some of these things are more abhorrent than you can expect. It's shocking. Now, I do want to share a few more stories here. I have a story, another Jihad Watch story, about a Muslim fruit vendor who was caught spitting on cut watermelons who had been arrested. Now, Robert Spencer put an article out May 24th, and I think this is really important. His article mentions the concept of contamination and poisoning attempts. He says, Spencer writes, Jihad contamination and poisoning attempts are not new. In India, there have been four recent incidents of Muslims spitting on the food of non-Muslims. One said he'd been doing it for years. Also in India in 2019, Muslims plotted to poison food offered in Hindu temples that is consumed by at least 40,000 devotees. Think about that. Al-Qaeda has long considered the contamination of food as a jihad mass murder tactic. And in 2017, the Islamic State called on Muslims to poison food in Western supermarkets. And it's happened at least twice in Britain. We know of a UK shop owner sold chocolate cake sprinkled with human feces. And another incident we know that was recorded in the UK, a Muslim who sprayed food with feces and urine can't be deported. Think about that. Food jihad. Muslim woman puts needles in meat in Canada. And we also know that jihadis have long wanted to poison the water supply. As far back as 2002, the feds arrested two jihadis who were carrying plans about how to poison water supplies. In 2003, Al-Qaeda threatened to poison water supplies in Western countries. In 2011, a jihadi in Spain likewise planned to poison water supplies. In May of 2013, seven Muslim chemical engineers were caught trespassing at the Cabin Reservoir, a key supply of water for Boston. They were caught after midnight. Only months later, and indirectly, did we hear that it was a criminal matter. A month later, locks were cut at the aqueduct that supplies water to Boston. Think about this. It was a staged plan. They were testing. Here's another one. May 13th, jihadis were caught in Canada who had considered poisoning air and water to murder up to 100,000 people. In October of 2013, the FBI was investigating a possible water supply threat in Wichita. In January of 2014, a Muslim broke into a water treatment plant in New Jersey. This goes on and on, people. Why are we not paying attention? Why, when they talk about jihad, do we not listen? This is some of the things that I cannot comprehend. I only have a few news stories here, and one of them is what's happening in Nigeria. I do want to tell you, next week I have an interview of a national security expert on what's happening in Nigeria and Kenya in respect to terrorism. I'm finding it interesting that this expert I'm going to be interviewing on Saturday, that he's not an expert on the concept of jihad. My question to many national security experts is, should we be classifying these acts of war as acts of war or simply as jihad? My choice in this matter would be to stop classifying acts of terrorism, acts of jihad as acts of terrorism. Why? In this country, a person gets charged with terrorism, they generally only get 20 years. That's it. So in 20 years, they're out. What do they do in those 20 years? My suggestion is, if you have any questions about this, you pick up Fertile Soil of Jihad by Patrick Dunleavy, and you learn about the prison system, the network for jihad. Patrick Dunleavy was an inspector, deputy inspector general of the penal system here in New York, and his work is incredibly important. He continues to do incredible work. So I do recommend you buy that book. Next, I have the story about Nigeria. It's one of the sad stories. A young mother, a 19-year-old Christian, was killed in central Nigeria by a Muslim Fulani herdsman. Now, this comes from Morningstar News. Fulani herdsman killed the wife and nephew of a Christian in Plateau State, Nigeria, in an attack on their home Thursday night, May 20th. Jeffrey Moses, 26, said he and his wife, 21-year-old Lottie Jeffrey, and nephew Shadrach Zwehi, 19, were asleep when armed herdsmen attacked their home at about 9:20 p.m. in Jebu Mayan, Biango village. Biango district, Bassa County. Lottie Jeffrey was a mother to a 16-month-old baby. Earlier that day, Fulani herdsmen had trespassed on his farm and issued threats. He said about five herdsmen had forced their way to the house that night, and each of them armed. Moses said, adding that he was asleep in his room with their baby while his wife slept in another room. He said, I heard gunshots. I woke up and was very weak. I tried standing up, but was unable to do so, told the Morning Star News. The herdsmen shot their gun 3 times before forcing their way into our house. Lady Moses, instantly killed, was a member of a local Roman Catholic church, as her husband, Zwehi, is a member of an evangelical church. Winning All was taken to a medical clinic where he later died. Quote, I believe those who attack my family are Fulani herdsmen because they've been responsible for the incessant attacks on our people, Moses said. Earlier that day, about 4 p.m., the Fulani had trespassed on the farm, destroying their crops, and threatened to attack them afterwards. He'd only been married for a few years. I want you to think about this. He's a very young couple. Yeah. Cousin and wife lost. Why are we as a country classifying acts of jihad as terrorism when they're really acts of treason? Now, that's the actual truth of the matter. Now, people, the stuff I'm sharing is not being shared on the news. Ask yourself why. Why is this stuff not being talked about on the news? Well, part of that is because the news does not want you to have these facts. Why am I sharing information about COVID vaccines that show you they can be dangerous? Because the regular news is not doing this. It's scary. I don't know what else to tell you besides the fact that it's scary. This truth is unbelievable, indisputable. Go to, again, V-A-E-R-S. I'll get the link again for you. I am telling you, go and download the spreadsheet. You're going to need to unzip it a little bit. This information is mind-numbing. Please go to V-A-E-R-S.H-H, that's two H's, HHS.gov. I'm telling you that this information will shock and appall you. It will make you ask so many questions. Please, please go and download this information. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this book I'm going to be putting out, hopefully this week. Again, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. On the back, I've written, it's affecting you whether you know it or not. Those with the Islamic social norms discussed in this book are influencing the areas where you live, whether you know it or not. The book asks questions and answers them with Islamic scriptures from the Quran, the Hadith, and the Sirah. It then connects the questions on social norms to recent news stories. Yes, this book connects recent Islamic social norms to their scriptures and to the practice of these social norms on display in news today. Just as a cancer festers and slowly eats at a body from within, unless it's caught and treated early, civilization jihad is just as dangerous. I want you to think about that. Civilization jihad is happening in your community. It's happening in mine. How long do we let it fester? How long do we let it continue? I don't know what to tell you. How do we stop it? My biggest suggestion, stop allowing Muslims to come into the country. That is number one. And from there, you can deal with who's part of your country. It doesn't matter what country you're in. Putting people who support the concept of jihad into your country isn't exactly what I would call an intelligent move. Now, again, if you want to dispute any of this, please, please take a look at the scriptures, the Islamic scriptures. I'm going to tell you, take a look at history. Some of this stuff will blow your mind. Why? Because it's hard to believe. I think that's part of the issue. Many of us don't want to believe it. And one of the things that I did learn about when I studied intelligence analysis, I learned that the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all those alphabet soup agencies were forbidden from looking into Islam as a possible cause of terrorism against the United States. That has not been allowed. And to think that it's not allowed because President Bush created a policy that said Islam is not the problem. I would never have known that if I hadn't started to study intelligence analysis. These things are shocking, appalling, and more. My suggestion is to do what you can to stay informed. Do what you can to find the truth. And Simple Facts of Life, thank you for listening. Oh my gosh, the truth is out there, people. These laws, that there are laws out there protecting people who are not even part of your country today. We have, I'm hoping also to have my friend Todd Benzman join us again soon. He's been doing some incredible work along the border, and his work has been revealing, very revealing, of why migrants are coming here from around the world. He actually interviews them, and he's been hearing the same answer. This kind of surprises me no matter how many times I hear it. He'll ask them, why are you coming, and what made you come? And the answer is, they came because Biden gave the la invitation. What? So while he was running for president, he issued an invitation to them to come. You know, it sounds shocking to hear. It doesn't sound believable, but that was their answer. You know, that's the truth of it. And nobody's willing to discuss these things except for the guy who's on the front line and asking those questions, which is Todd Benzman. Think, if possible, you should go to Todd, T-O-D-D, Benzman, BENSMAN.com, and look at his work. He also has a book out that I highly, highly recommend. It's called America's Covert Border Wars, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. I recommend this highly. I love this book, and the author, again, he's a friend, but I'm telling you, his work is extremely important. Some of this stuff is, like I said, it's too unbelievable. It's just shocking. How do we stop, how do we start protecting our own selves? Get involved locally. Get involved in your local political arena. Get involved in your state political arena. Get involved in your country political arena. How you can start by joining your local political party and making a stand as a patriot. Do that today. There are only two political parties. I have mentioned one already, the Democratic Party, the founder of the KKK, the one that is the responsible for slavery and several acts of horrible, horrible acts against minorities in this country, including the Trail of Tears. Yes, Andrew Jackson, the founder of the Democratic Party, caused this. But no one wants to talk about those things. So what? I'm not going to tell you what party to join. I would tell you, but I think it's better you make those choices. You need to understand that if you're registered as an independent, that is a party. It is a political party. How you choose to be active in that party, I don't think the independents really care. I don't think the other parties' people really care. They just care that you're quiet and you listen to them. I say stop being quiet. Start getting active. Why? Because if you don't do that today, you're going to lose those freedoms, such as freedom of speech. Why? Facebook is showing that they can steal it from you. Google is showing they can steal it from you. But are you ready for your own children to lose those freedoms? Because if you don't say anything today, that's on you. Now I'm going to say goodbye and thank you for listening. I'm going to sign off a little bit early. I just did not save enough stories to keep going. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we need to be getting the truth out. So God bless you all. And I'm going to just sign off from StreamYard and I will close out BTR. So here we go. Ending broadcast there. And with Blog Talk Radio, I am going to send us off with one of my favorite songs, which I want you to continue to think about how important it is to be truthful, how important it is to stand up for what's right. So here we go with Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down. Brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass.